Hello, and thank you for joining us for the That's Solo Life podcast, the podcast for PR pros and marketers who work for themselves. I am Michelle Kane. My company is Voice Matters. I am here as ever, as always, with my wonderful co-host, Karen Swim. She is the leader of our solo PR pro pack. And we are also ultra thrilled to have a special guest. But first, we'll keep you in anticipation. We're going to talk to Karen a little bit. Hey, Karen, how are you today?
I am amazing, Michelle. Thank you so much. To all of our friends who are snowed in, we are thinking about you.
Yes.
That's no fun to be snowed in without power. So we hope that situation gets resolved. It's pretty cold here, but I can't complain because we have heat. And it's going to get really hot in here because we have with us today one of my favorite people, one of my favorite speakers, and he just is, you know, one of my favorite authors also.
Yep.
Jason Falls.
Hi.
Jason, welcome. You're a great friend to
hey,
us
Jason.
Solos.
Thank you for having me. I'm really glad to be here.
We are so excited to talk about this baby right here.
Yes.
So excited. Leave it to you to come up with a whole new take on influencer marketing. Solos, the book is available. I bought mine on Amazon and it came very quickly. And I promise you that I have my highlighter stuck inside of it because you'll be highlighting passages and taking notes. So yeah, let's talk about this. You know, what was the inspiration for Winfluence?
So I get frustrated when the mainstream media likes to, you know, ding on influencers. Actually, I get frustrated every time they talk about them because they frame them the wrong way. And so if I'm a business owner out there and I see a mainstream media article or news story about influencers, it's typically, oh, you know, those influencers, the people who post the peace sign and duck lips, you know, the selfie nation, and they're very superficial and you can't measure it and they don't actually drive people to your business. That's how the mainstream media characterizes influencers. And you know what? There's a sliver of influencers out there that are absolutely like that. But the vast majority, I believe 80 to 90% of what's out there in the influencer space are brilliant content creators who have built communities and audiences that hang on their every word, that are engaged with their content, that they can actually have real influence upon. And I mean, I've been doing this, you know, if you count public relations and media relations as influence marketing, I've been doing this my whole career. Mm-hmm. And just the fact that there's new media people out there that aren't necessarily trained journalists, that aren't necessarily with traditional media outlets, but they have audiences and they create great, great content. So when I look at that world and I see what the mainstream media sort of portrays it at, I started to realize we've painted ourselves into a corner a bit. Just by using the term influencer in influencer marketing, people automatically think Instagram, YouTube.
Yes.
They don't really go beyond that. And so what I wanted to do was say, hey, we've got to rethink this because there's this vast world of opportunity out there for brands, for PR pros, for solo PR pros. And if we're thinking of influencers as Instagrammers and YouTubers, we're taking away the strategic reason, the thing we're doing, which is influencing. And influence can happen in a lot of different ways through a lot of different channels.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Michelle.
I was just going to say, I really love the whole premise of the book is, you know, you can blow the influencers off as, oh, they're just there, you know, to show you the shiny. Whereas, you know, you're really honing down and thinking strategically as all marketers should is, well, no, we want this influencer to make the audience take that next step of buying the product, subscribing to the service, whatever it is, which, I mean, we're all about measurement here. So,
I mean, to me, you know, I always tell people, it's funny, like we make it seem like influencing is this mystical, magical thing that only a certain group of people do when in reality, every human being has a sphere of influence.
Yep.
You may not be consciously aware of it. You know, I believe that people in marketing and sales and communications, we're intimately aware that you have influence, but everyone has it. These are people that have simply, they are using that influence in a way that drives results. Right. And I agree with you. I mean, people think of the influencer community as, you know, the TikTokers that trash houses and, you know, the, I love the duck lip example because it's right. And it's like, ugh, you, but the, you know, they, God bless them. You know, they're, you know, brands are utilizing them and they're driving ROI for the brands that utilize them. That may not be the people that influence me. I'm influenced by thinkers like you mm-hmm. and the wonderful David Merriman Scott, who wrote the 4-tier book.
Yeah.
So I love that you said that it's, you know, that Winfluence is a new way of approaching influencer marketing. So you improve your chances of success by using influence. And here's a key for me. It's different from what we've always thought of as influencer marketing because it shifts the perspective to the action rather than the channel.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So yeah. Again, it's focusing on what you're trying to do. You're trying to influence, mm-hmm. you know, you're not trying to influence her and you're not necessarily trying to use influencers. You're trying to use people who have influence and it can be online. It can be offline. There's a couple of really fun case studies that I talk about in the book where brands have said, you know what, we need to influence an audience and Instagram and YouTube is one thing, but we're a really hyper local business. So an Instagrammer with 250,000 followers, you know, less than 5% of which are going to be in the city, even if they are located in the city, those people aren't going to be relevant for you. And so, like, for instance, there's a case study that we actually, you know, helped our, one of our clients with at Cornette, University of Kentucky Healthcare, which is, you know, hospital healthcare system in central Kentucky. And it's a to make a long story short, basically, we said, well, who influences the audience we're trying to reach, which are, you know, the, sort of the medical decision makers in a family, what we call the someday audience. They don't need UK healthcare today, but they will someday. So it's either adults taking care of their parents or adults who are parents taking care of the kids. You know, so it's a nice, you know, sort of middle swath of the population.
Healthcare system.
And so,
and it's a,
somebody's talking there. Wow. I don't know what that was, but anyway,
we've channeled something.
So we were going after this someday audience and we thought, well, who influences this audience of medical decision makers in the central Kentucky area? And while, yes, there are some online influencers that, that layer in there, we also know that people who have influence in the community, like the mayor, like the CEO of the Urban League, like a local dentist who's very popular, like the music director at a Presbyterian church with a big congregation. These people have impact on the community, the direct community that we're trying to reach. And so instead of just reaching out to the online people, the food bloggers and whatnot for that area, we also reached out to these offline influencers and said, hey, UK healthcare is doing this thing. We would like for you to come participate in it and share it with your networks. And they did. And it was a very successful campaign.
I really love that. And, you know, it's interesting that you say that because you're right. You know, people have now associated influencers with digital only, and that's, you're missing so much by thinking beyond that. It's like, we forgot that there's a world that doesn't exist on the interwebs.
Really?
That's true. And I would also say this, you know, the online influencers can absolutely be the right channel for your business. And the difference, I think, between, and I distinguish this in the book, there's influencers, which is a general term for online influencers. I think that definition is people who create content with the intent of influencing. They're trying to build an audience. They're trying to build a subject matter expertise. Right. But I use the term in the book because I want to take that R out of that word. I want to say influence marketing instead of influencer marketing. And so I actually turn tides around chapter 4 and say, from now on, I'm going to refer to them as people of influence or influence partners. Because again, it doesn't have to be an Instagrammer. The Instagrammers may very well do a great job for fashion and beauty brands, for cocktails and spirits. There's lots of areas where Instagrammers make a ton of sense. But depending upon your geography, depending upon the type of business you are, depending upon whether or not your audience is even on Instagram, they may not be the right place to go. And it might be that, and you know what, if you're trying to persuade the state legislator to vote a certain way on a bill, lobbyists are your influencers and they don't have anything to do with Instagram probably. So you've just got to start thinking about it more broadly.
Right. And it really goes hand in hand with, you know, the I don't want to say trend because that sounds too trite, but you know, we've been saying for years, referral marketing or, you know, word of mouth and having your customers be your evangelists. It seems to go hand in hand with that, or really amplifying that, taking to the next level.
And actually in the book, word of mouth is kind of one of the, you know, there's four purposes I think that you use influence marketing for. Yeah. And I kind of spell those out. You can use influence marketing I've got it written down in case of persuade, obviously. and persuasion lines up with advertising, right? So yeah, you can say, here's this product, let's go buy it. You can use it to associate, which is more of a PR thing, right? And we're not necessarily pushing people to buy on a certain website, but we want to associate our brand with a lifestyle or, you know, a visual style or some person who has a reputation of being, you know, aligning with our brand in some way. So there's an association factor there. Then there's validate. You can actually use influence programs to drive people to post ratings and reviews of your product or service, which helps you with search. It helps you with website traffic coming to your site, et cetera. And then the last one is enthuse. And that's that word of mouth component of driving enthusiasm around your brand. And I would argue that most of the great word of mouth programs are influence marketing programs. They may not be influencer marketing programs because they're not dedicated to the online space, but there's actually a couple of case studies again in the book of that offline influence coming to play. Mm-hmm. If you broaden your perspective and look at it without that R and understand, what are we trying to do? We're trying to influence a certain group of people to take action. Okay. So where are they? What impacts them? What channels impact them? If it's YouTube and Instagram, that's great, but it might be LinkedIn. It might be blogs. It might be forums. It might be the president of the local PTA is your great influencer if you're trying to reach moms in that area. So you just got to kind of look at it from a broader perspective.
Yeah. I think that's great. And I think it adds a whole new energy to an area where, you know, I'm sure we've all had clients who might say, get me an influencer and, you know, solve everything. It's the new get me on the Today Show. And you just think, okay, let's sit down and talk about this.
Well, and let's be clear. If you're a fashion or a beauty brand and you have $1 million budget, Kim Kardashian posting one time on her Instagram is going to drive sales. Right. Now, I would consider the Kardashians a level of influence that's really celebrity. It's not necessarily an influencer at that point. They got famous for doing something other than building content on the internet. They got famous for, you could argue that they're famous for weird things. That's fine. I don't, you know, they have a TV show. They're famous for being famous, but an online influencer, a content creator primarily first, as opposed to a quote unquote influencer first, the ones who actually drive influence and action online are the ones who start out creating great content on social networks with the intent of building and persuading an audience. And those are the ones I think you need to drill in and look for. Find the ones that are really engaged. And when they say, hey, I like using this, that means their audience is going to go try it or buy it. Those are the ones you got to uncover.
Yeah, I guess let's talk about that a little bit, because you discuss some of the tools that you use, online tools, to find out, you know, who are good candidates to use as influence marketers.
So, yeah, there's lots of tools out there. But again, I would pull back and let's start from the beginning and say, OK, what's your goal? Yeah. What are you trying to accomplish? What is that audience? Which audience are you trying to persuade? And what do you know about them? Because, again, picking tool or picking the influencer is dependent upon what your goal is.
Right.
And again, if you're local, if you're trying to reach, you know, a local audience that's not necessarily online, it may not be an influencer, an online influencer that you're looking for. But if you say, look, we're a national brand, we need branding and awareness, we need exposure, we need coverage, reach and impressions. That's what we're looking for. Okay. Right. Well, then you're going to go to a tool. There's plenty of them out there. And I've used probably a good dozen of them over the last couple of years, where you can, you know, type in, you know, bourbon, and it's going to come up with a list of people who, based on either that word in their biography or that word in their content a lot, it's going to say this person talks about bourbon a lot. They have this many followers, this much reach, et cetera. Those tools are only as good as the human being using them. Okay.
Yes.
So type in your stuff, get your list, just like you would type in Incision or Meltwater and get a PR list of media outlets. They're going to spit out stuff based on keywords. It's not a human being saying these are curated for you. It's a computer saying we found a match that might work. What you have to do is then go through that list and vet them and say, this person mentioned bourbon one time 2 years ago and doesn't ever talk about booze. And so that's not a good influencer. They may have 600,000 followers on various social networks, right, but that's not who we're trying to reach, right?
Right.
So what you've got to do is go through and look at that list and vet them. And when I say vet them, you've got to consume their content. Go look and see, do they do sponsored content? Is it good? Is it persuasive? Does it look like their audience is actually going to take action? The tools may provide you with a little score that says, hey, we think this influencer has a, you know, reliable audience, good content, they're heavily engaged. But again, that's an algorithm deciding a number. You got to go look at that content and make sure that it's right for you.
Yeah,
100%, 100%.
Now, what about the, you know, kind of the untapped influencer? So the person that maybe is not seeking to be a professional influencer, but they really are a thought leader, somebody that has credibility and respect. Talk a little bit about utilizing those, because I think sometimes those people are overlooked or not thought of as influencers. We label them something else.
Sure. So in that back, going back to that, you know, the UK healthcare case study, you know, a lot of the people we reached out to there were not influencers. They had no intention of building audiences online. Some of them didn't even have audiences online, but they were impactful in the community. Now, to be fair, the University of Kentucky is a big employer in Fayette County, Kentucky. If you go to the mayor and say, will you participate in this? She's not going to say no. But, you know, the music director at the local Presbyterian church, the dentist, the real estate agent, the people that we reached out to that had impact on their communities. There's some community pride there that you can tap into and say, hey, we're doing this and we would love your help in sort of sharing with your network, because we know a lot of people respect your opinion. And to be honest with you, when it's someone who doesn't intend to be an online influencer, more often than not, they go, oh, yeah, I'm flattered you would ask. Right. And so you don't have to worry about paying them. You don't have to, you know, worry about anything crazy. Now, you may not be able to get a whole lot of tracking and measurement out of their analytics, but, you know, you get what you pay for. If they're going to do it for free, what do you care? They're doing it and you're getting that traction, and you can measure certain things that'll make it look like it's representative of what you're trying to do. But I think what you really have to do with any influencer, whether it's one who is not, you know, doesn't expect to be one, or if it's someone who has millions of followers online and you're trying to figure out an engagement with them, you've got to go to them with what's in it for them and what's in it for their audience. Yeah. And I like to lead with what's in it for their audience, because a lot of these people are smart enough to know if I'm not delivering good value to my audience, it doesn't work. It fails.
Right.
So, and if you think of it that way, and you think of it in terms of I've got to do something for their audience, it takes you out of the mindset, the corporate mindset of I have to sell stuff. I've got to, it's all about me. I've got to push me. Because if you go at an influencer with that, you may have a few that are like, yeah, I'll take your money and I'll hold your product and smile.
Yeah.
But it's transactional, it's done, and it's not really overall effective. Yeah. If you, however, go to them and say, let's talk about a value exchange. I want to provide value to your audience. I want to provide value to you. I want you to provide value to me and my audience too. How does that work? That opens the opportunity for they create content that you can use. Right now, all of a sudden, they're a version of a freelancer. They create engagement around your brand and product and service with their audience that allows their audience to say, hey, I should consider this. You know, I should try this. And if you talk about it in terms of the value exchange, it's not so much you're concerned about the specific dollar amounts that you're going to use, because they realize, hey, there might be money here, but there's more in it for me and my audience than that. And there's more in it for you than just getting a post. And so, again, thinking about it as much more of a relationship building thing and a partnership, I think you start to see a lot more, you know, traction for what you're trying to do.
I love that. I love that, because we talk about that all the time. You know, all business is relationship. And I think even, you know, audiences, they can tell. Yeah, like you say, if someone's just holding up a can of something, oh, I get it. You're trying to sell me. All right, what's your next post? I don't care.
I've actually I found a post one time of this beauty style influencer who I think it was like a Nivea skin cream or something that she did a partnership with. And I went back and looked, and like 10 posts leading up to this particular post where these really engaging, she's having a lot of fun. She's engaging her audience. She's asking them questions. She's sharing tips and tricks on how to do certain things.
Yeah.
And then there's this post of her going, you know, holding up this bottle with this weird smile on her face. And I'll paraphrase, but this is almost what the content said. It almost said, wink, wink, got to pay the bills.
Yeah. You know,
like this post. Here's my mortgage for the month. now we'll get back to business.
Yeah. Yeah. Or God forbid when they, the rare occasions when you see they cut and paste, fill in blank here. And you think, oh God.
Yeah. Oh. So that's the type of influencer that might have a really good engaged audience, but doesn't understand the value exchange in a partnership. Right. And then there's those who are constantly flooding their streams with these really, I love this product, but you can tell they're fake. It's the genuine ones that come through and that you can go, okay, yeah, this is good. And this will actually produce the outcome we're looking for.
Yeah, absolutely. You people know, can tell.
I heard Kim Kardashian on David Letterman's new talk show. Mm-hmm. I listened to that episode and it was interesting to hear her talk about the times that she got it wrong. And, you know, it's like, got to pay the bills. And I took on stuff that didn't align with my brand and got caught out for it. And yeah. I mean, I think that is a mistake that, you know, if you're someone who desires to be an influencer, you have to watch that. You have to still be true to who you really are. I've gotten approached for things, which is funny because I'm not an influencer, but you know, I'm not going to promote a skincare product that I don't use. You know, I only use cruelty-free vegan products. And so when you're pushing something on me, it's like, yeah, no thanks. My dog gets approached to collabs.
That's nice.
Well, I mean,
but we haven't taken one up yet. And so, but I do post about products and stuff, but not because they're paying me, just because I genuinely like and use them. Yeah. And you know, a lot of it is food. I mean, it's like,
yeah, I mean, and the position that I'm in, obviously, and Karen, you are an influencer. You influence the people who watch this show. You influence people who read your content, the solo PR community. You're influential over them. So, and I have this little sliver of influence in the marketing space too, because the software companies typically come to me and say, right, you know about technology, you know about social, you know about PR, you can look at our product and give us feedback and also share with your audience. And so, and then right, I've got a podcast where the influence marketing people want to say, well, let's do something with Jason because he's talking about us all the time and he can talk about our stuff. And so my approach to that has always been, I will always be really honest with the company and I'll always be really honest with my audience. But I also have built the trust in my audience over the years that they know this is a way for me to be able to continue to do what I do. There's a monetization play here that they accept. And there's a little sponsor read at the front end of my podcast. And of course, this month, it's all the book because that's the only thing I really am worried about people buying at the moment. Exactly. But I almost always, I always only bring products to the table that I think are really going to help folks. And I think my audience trusts that and knows that. And so I've had a number of I had a call with a web developer company that said, hey, we want you to, you know, talk about us. And I'm like, my audience doesn't come to me for web development advice. That's going to be totally disingenuous to what I talk about and what they do. Now, they might say, hey, who do you use for web development? And I might say, well, I use these three or four options. But if I say I only use this company, they're going to call BS on that. They're going to know I'm doing that for a thing. So I just told the guys, look, I'm not the right guy for you. You need to find somebody who's a little bit more on the, you know, web development, website building, IT side of things rather than me, because that's not the kind of stuff I endorse or I talk about.
Right. And it all comes down to, too, you know, I know the thing, one of the things I preach to my clients all the time is show people how you're helpful to them, even if it's how to find this year's W-2 online, you know, all the way from the basic things to the larger things of, you know, how to choose a criminal lawyer or something like that. You know, when life is freaked out and you just need to know what to do. That's right. And, you know, at the end of the day, I think we even talked about this last week with Cammy, you know, just be helpful. And I think, you know, influence marketing is a great way to do that. And I think, I don't know, do you think a lot of companies are already sort of doing that and they just don't realize it?
Yeah, I mean, I think if you look at it from that perspective of influence being bigger than influencers, I think there are a lot of companies that are doing it in various ways. Anybody who's doing it, has a good PR practice, is doing it.
Yeah.
You know, anybody that's doing community relations, event programming is doing it in some form or fashion.
I guess I should say not. I felt like I diluted the whole concept. I mean, you know, just to say that, hey, you know, this is a muscle that you really need to work. And if you do it the right way, like you talk about in your book, it's powerful.
It absolutely
is.
It absolutely is. And here's another, here's the other thing. Here's the big mistake that I think a lot of brands make and how they can immediately fix it, or how you as you know, solo PR pros and whatnot can go out there and recommend this stuff. The biggest mistake brands make of all sizes is they go after the reach. They go after the number of followers number, right? They think bigger is better, and bigger, in some cases, bigger can be good, but think quality over quantity, because again, you want to know that this influencer, an influencer with 25,000 really, really engaged fans, is a hell of a lot more productive than one with 250,000 followers and light engagement. So, you know, really look at how productive they can be with their content and how they motivate their audience. So the first part is they go for the big number and the big reach. And they also think in terms of transactions. Here's money, you post about me, and then I'm done. If I would much rather, if I were a CMO today, I would much rather find 10 or 12 really engaged, influential people that touch the audience that I'm trying to reach and partner with those same 10 or 12 people for 5 years. And that's who I'm using, because I want to take advantage of repetition. I want to take advantage of building the relationship. I want to take advantage of aligning myself with their brand and their brand with mine, because I want to reach their audience, and I want it to be consistent. And if you do that over the long haul and build those relationships, you're going to get much more value out of each thing they do for you than you would get out of paying them for a post and then walking away. So lots of people want to say, let's find 200 influencers with at least 50,000 followers and have them, you know, post our coupon code.
One day.
That might work, you know, for the President's Day sale. But if you're trying to build value over time and grow your audience of customers and loyal customers, invest in it in that way, and you probably have a better shot.
Yeah. Of course, our podcast audience can't see this, but Karen and I are nodding like two bobbleheads.
And, you know, you say that, and it plays into something else that I've become really passionate about calling out for clients, is that there's a lot of talk recently about employers helping to support their workers building personal brands. I would say that the influencers that are your employees that you're not tapping into. And people forget that, you know, they forget they have this wealth of influencers right in front of them. You're paying them a check. You just have to utilize them, and you have to engage them. And I mean, what's more authentic about people that are excited about the place that they work for and that they're sharing genuinely and authentically, and they have an audience that listens to them. But sometimes companies miss that, or they shut it down with a bunch of rules and policies that hinder how that can really happen.
Yeah, there's a new trend that's emerging in the space. Analytica is one of the influencer marketing platforms. They're based out of the United Kingdom, and they actually recategorized the different types of influencers, because, you know, we've always thought of influencers as social influencers. Well, they actually came out and said, well, wait a minute, there's subdivisions that we need to understand. There are social influencers, but there are also industry analysts, and there are also, you know, media and publications that are influential, and there's all these different divisions. And one of the divisions was, there are people who are influential because of where they work. And I use the example of Ronnie Mani with Adobe, who I've had on my podcast before and is absolutely brilliant. She's a customer engagement specialist and also, you know, has run Adobe's influence marketing programs for a long time. Ronnie would be an influencer in the digital space regardless of where she worked, but a lot of her influence is because she's at Adobe. And so, again, companies investing in their own employees, building those sort of corporate personal brands, if you will, grows the footprint and the impact that your employee base can have. And then I'll flip that around. When we did that thing with UK Healthcare a couple of years ago, the whole goal of that was to drive engagement around this one Facebook video. It was a brand film that we launched. The first thing the brand did was they pulled 10,000 employees together and showed them the film and said, this launches tomorrow. We need your help to go out there and drive engagement around this. So taking the employee influence, taking the online influence, taking the community influence and putting it all together. And now you've got a campaign that I would sort of, you know, kitschily call a Winfluence campaign.
Yeah. I love that. I love
it. And there it is.
Yeah.
Which actually, if our listeners don't already know, that is the title of your current podcast, Winfluence.
It is. Winfluence, the Influence Marketing Podcast. I would love for people to subscribe. I do two episodes a week, interview everything from CEOs of the software companies to people at agencies developing programs to actual influencers who are talking about how they've built and how they work with brands and whatnot. So I think it's a fun listen. We have a lot of fun there. Today's episode, by the way, is Ted Wright from Fizz, the word of mouth marketing agency down in Atlanta near Karen. And Ted and I get into a little arm wrestling match over whether or not influencer marketing is word of mouth marketing. So there's some fun conversations to be had there.
I love it. When people buy the book on Amazon, they should also take that extra step of following you as an author, because you're also doing some fun stuff with Amazon Live and they want to stay plugged into that. And I would say that even though we might think of this as a book for, you know, marketers, communicators, public relations professionals, I would say that if you are someone who wants to learn more about being influential and moving from influencer to winfluencer, I would pick up a copy of this book too. So I feel like it's for everybody. I mean, there's just so much wisdom in here. And for, you know, the solo PR pro group, this is what the book looks like. Don't want you to get any fake copies.
There it is.
It's amazing. Seriously, you guys, I mean, I jumped at the opportunity even before I'd read one page, because I have so much respect for Jason and I knew it was going to be good and it was better than I expected. So it's so well researched and so very detailed. I dug into it and happily, and I'm like, ooh, this, wait, let me read that again. Wait.
I know, I can't. I have to say, I'm watching my inbox because Amazon Kindle's holding out on me. So I cannot wait to dig in. But I agree with what you say, Karen. It's really for anyone, you know, CEOs all the way down. If you're trying to just grow as a person, and if you find yourself as, let's say, a natural connector of people, you know, I just think it's way more than the silos that, like you say, I love what that you say, you're reframing the concept of what is, you know, someone who with influence, because it's so easy for people outside of this business to just think of, like you say, the duck lips and the peace sign.
There's actually an entire chapter that is dedicated with case studies that talks about making your brand an influencer. And so for, you know, business owners, small, medium, large, there's some ideas in there that say, how do I become influential as a brand, as opposed to having to go out and, you know, partner with or pay for influence elsewhere. And so there's a really good B2B case study in there. There's a really good B2C case study in there. So
fantastic.
I think the book's pretty useful for a lot of different people, including influencers who want to understand brands a little bit better.
So if you're listening to this now, we expect that the next thing you do, if you're in your car, pull over, please. But the next thing you should do is order this book. I think I heard Southern Belle Swim in the background saying, "Where's my agents? Come on, mom, get me some influence."
Yeah. Well, her mom told her that she's four now, and it's really time for her to contribute to the household.
To the household.
Like, you need a job, girl. You're four.
If I could get my dog to do anything other than stare out the window at squirrels, I would probably try to build influence for her. But she's just kind of, that's all she does.
She's big with the squirrel community. It's all good.
We should also say that in addition to all of the areas that he influences, if you want to know about bourbons, Jason Falls is your man.
Where is it? Yep, there's one right there. So,
oh, I see it.
Yeah. We like our bourbon in Kentucky, and I have the good fortune of working with the Sazerac family of bourbons from the Buffalo Trace Distillery. So Buffalo Trace, Eagle Rare, Weller, E.H. Taylor, all those guys are good friends of mine.
Fantastic.
Love it.
We'll have to have a happy hour sometime soon.
I like those. I have a lot of hours that are very happy.
Well, Jason,
the lack of influencer.
Yeah, exactly. Well, we can't thank you enough for taking the time to hang out with us today on the That Solo Life podcast. And as we say, we're going to say it one more time, make sure you go on Amazon.com and follow Jason. Buy up all his books, because he really does bring the smarts and he brings the bourbon. I mean, what more could we ask for?
Yeah. So thank you both for having me on the show. I really appreciate being here.
Oh, it's been great. So until next time, thanks for joining us on That's All Alive.